Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show today. A soup's on of FA Cup with Luton getting a haul and mauling, and the Saints beaten by a crash. A dash of Premier League with the Manchester Derby and more. And a big dollop of Everton's points penalty reduction. We ask, is PSR the new VAR? All that and other things too in this Totally Football Show. Well, hey, listener. Thursday, 29th of February. Ooh, it's a special day. Always a special day when Adrian Clark's with us, of course. Hi, Adrian. Also here today, Tom Williams.
Hello, James.
Hi, Tom. And also a big welcome back to Jay Harris.
Thank you very much. It is good to be back.
Yeah. When did you get back from AFCON?
About 2 weeks ago. And I just spent that time sleeping.
Brilliant. Did you have a brilliant time though?
I did have a brilliant time. Really unique tournament and experience. And anybody that's ever thought about going should definitely go.
What was your best bit?
I think when Ivory Coast beat Senegal on penalties because everybody just expected they'd get knocked out. And it was the interim head coach MS Faye's first game taking over from, for people that don't know, Ivory Coast kind of sat their head coach in the middle of the tournament. Senegal scored after 3 minutes. The fans let off this red flare and I just felt like, what's all going to end in tears for Ivory Coast? And then next thing you know, they'd gone on and won the competition.
Magic. Exactly. Magic of the cup.
It was.
Right. What was the best food that you ate for the first time in Ivory Coast?
I had some very, very nice like grilled chicken and plantain. As simple as it was just done extremely well. So it was good.
Classic. 29th of February, as I say, of course, it's leap year. And Turalde says, in case you do questions for the show, how does Duncan feel recording a podcast on a leap year day? Duncan's not here, Ander.
That's how stressed out he is by this statistical anomaly of the leap year. No one knows where he is.
But he did do the leap year Ferran Torres gag on Twitter. Happy 6th birthday to Ferran Torres. Still so impressive you scored a Premier League hat-trick. So that's nice. And I also asked for some top leap year content. We'll have a little bit of that later on. A little bit of that later on. Should we mention the new story that's just got us buzzing? Cristiano Ronaldo getting a one-game suspension, Adrian?
It's just remarkable that, A, he still gets wound up by Messi, but that he thought
people
that
chanting Messi.
I know. But the gesture itself was just so low rent.
Can you describe the gesture?
Just, no, well, no.
It's like a vulgar thrusting.
Like a clock fist bump, but not chest height.
I think it was vulgar.
Yeah, vulgar. Vulgar thrusting. Provocative.
Like how is he not beyond? Is he not above that?
You think, like, I mean, he's a 39-year-old man, one of the greatest footballers of all time, and opposition fans have been goading him by chanting Messi at him for over 10 years, and he is still rattled by it.
I'm sure Salieri felt the same way when people shouted Mozart at him in the street.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Anyway, there you go. We've got banks to talk about today. As mentioned, leap year content. Also, we'll be diving into that Everton points penalty reduction and what's likely to follow. Big weekend of the Premier League. But let's begin with the FA Cup fifth round.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
It's been goals galore. Silva into Haaland, looking for five. Erling Haaland with a five-star show.
FA Cup fifth round. Early games saw the nailed boot of big club mercilessly stamping down on fragile cup dreams. You had Luton mauled by Man City 6-2. Maidstone crushed by Coventry 5-0. Leicester, the 2021 winners, knocked out Bournemouth with a 1-0 away win. On Wednesday, Man United also squeaked past Forest 1-0. Another goal from Casemiro. Newcastle needed penalties to win at Ewood Park against Blackburn Rovers. Wolves beat Brighton 1-0. Liverpool beat Saints 3-0. with two 18-year-olds doing the scoring, not in leap years either. And Chelsea were 3-2 winners against Leeds. Who saw what? Tom, you were watching Forest's defeat to Man United.
Yes, I watched that. Watched the highlights of all the other games. I mean, it's quite a decent round, I would say, in the main. Lots of goals, not too many upsets, but, you know, decent spectacle.
Well, you had the thrills of Man City's performance against Luton. How thrilling was their opponents this weekend in the Manchester derby, Man United at the City Ground?
Less thrilling, which you probably gleaned already, really, from looking at the scoreline. But, I mean, they probably deserved to win.
Probably deserved to win.
It was, despite the fact there was only one goal in the game, it was quite an entertaining game. It was quite open. Both teams going at it. United had most of the ball, hit the bar early on through Antony. But Forest looked really dangerous on the counter-attack, and United had this patched-up back four of Diogo Dalo, Victor Lindelof, Rafael Varane and Sofyan Amrabat, who must be the one of the kind of least qualified auxiliary left-backs that the game has ever seen.
Well, their early season malaise was often attributed to his use in that position. Will that be the plan this Sunday when they face Man City, do you think?
Well, the difficulty is that both Luke Shaw and Tyrell Malacia are injured. Aaron Wan-Bissaka is also injured. So they've only got one fit senior fullback in Diogo Dalo, who's actually been one of their better players this season. Was very good again last night against Forest. So he is the only fullback they have. I mean, there must be someone who's just slightly quicker,
didn't he?
Yeah, and I wondered when I saw the starting lineup whether they might put him there and put Amrabat in the middle, because the risk with Amrabat on the left hand side is that you can expose him. And I was slightly surprised that Nuno Espirito Santo put Divock Origi on the right and Anthony Elanga on the left. I mean, Origi actually had quite a good game, created quite a few chances for himself, probably came about as close to scoring as any Forest player did. But Elanga is one of the quickest players in the division and would have had Amrabat on toast, but ended up playing on the left hand side and actually didn't get too much out of Dalo.
Who do you think Pep will put on the left come Sunday?
On the left or on the right? Well, against Amrabat, on United's left.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah. Sorry.
Either Bernardo Silva or Phil Foden, I would have thought.
Okay. Doku doesn't play that side, does he?
No.
But otherwise he would have a field.
I mean, I'd put Jeremy Doku on that side. Then if I was a manager, humiliating auxiliary fullbacks would probably be my number one priority above even winning matches and trophies. So.
Right. Well, perhaps City can do both. City in remarkable form, as mentioned. 6-2, their victory away at Kenilworth Road on Tuesday. Some numbers here. I mean, Erling Haaland scoring the first five of the goals. Four of them were assisted by Kevin De Bruyne, or was it all of them in the end?
Four of them. One by Bernardo Silva.
Okay. Of course, Erling Haaland has also previously scored 9 in one game, but I think that was against Tahiti. Was it not Tahiti?
It was someone like Tahiti.
Yeah, it might have been Tahiti.
It's his 20th career hat-trick as well.
Is that right?
Yeah, which is already more than Sergio Aguero, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. It's more than Harry Kane, more than Mbappe.
Honduras.
It was Honduras, not Tahiti. Apologies. To both those proud island nations. Dennis Law, here's an interesting quirk. Did you know this, Adrian? That Dennis Law once scored all 6 goals in a 6-2 victory for Man City. And here's the chilling twist. It was also away at Luton in the FA Cup. But this was in 1961. And, Tom?
Well, the even weirder twist was that it didn't count.
Yeah.
Because
in the records. It's
the game
there.
Was called off.
Yeah.
That is
because of
so
fog, I
think. 69 minutes on the clock and City are 6-2 up. There's torrential rain. And the referee felt he had no option but to abandon the game, which was subsequently replayed. And what happened? City lost 3-1. And Law's incredible feat, all 6 goals in a 6-2 win, erased from the records. Not entirely, because some brave souls, etc. Anyway, Haaland's now up to 27 goals this season. For the holders, City.
Yeah, going man to man on him was a bad idea from Luton. They weren't quite brave. They tried something, and it didn't work. And I felt for the defenders that were assigned. You know, to was it Mengi? I think was assigned really to Kevin De Bruyne. And like, if you get tight to him, and you've got De Bruyne, you know, supplying the ammo, he's going to spin you, and he's going to score. And I think, you know, we saw it on numerous occasions. So yeah, I think Rob Edwards, if he had his time again, might go with a different game plan.
Jordan Clark did get a lovely brace himself, the first of which was a peach.
Beautiful, wasn't it? Yeah, proper postage stamp.
And the second one was lovely as well. Yeah. Little scoop pass by Ross Barkley, and he chests it down and slams it in. And it was only 3-2 at that point. So, you know, a fleeting frisson
it
of jeopardy.
On. What do you think's going to happen this weekend then at the Etihad?
I think Man City are going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
City have won 14 of their last 15 in all competitions. Last season, this fixture produced the highest scoring Manchester derby of all time, 6-3, with Haaland getting a hat-trick, Foden as well. I mean, you could imagine something similar this time. United, Luke Shaw and who's the other one who's out?
Rasmus Højlund. I mean, I think the unfortunate thing from a Man United perspective is that this game is taking place this weekend and not last weekend, because prior to the Fulham defeat, things were looking up.
Right.
You know, they're on a little unbeaten run in the league. Rasmus Højlund had scored in 6 consecutive Premier League games. And now they've lost him to injury. They've lost Luke Shaw to injury, various other injury issues. They had that terrible performance against Fulham. And that is, I mean, you know, there is a fragility to United this season. You know that the next disastrous performance is never far away. And unfortunately for them, they had it last weekend. And so they're going into this game against City, okay, off the back of a reasonably convincing win over Forest in the Cup in midweek, but with a lot of that momentum that they seem to be accumulating having dissipated.
Yeah, I did co-coms in that Fulham game, and Fulham should really have won the game 4-5. Like, it was embarrassing the way that they were slicing through them. So you think about what City might be able to do. I think he might have to change and just maybe put Bruno in one of the wide spots, you know, because he's short of wide players at the moment, isn't he? So he's got Rashford really as his only striker. Garnacho's got to play, and then it's one other. And I think you probably put Bruno there and just have three proper central midfielders in there just to block up that central area, because if they don't, I think City will wipe the floor with them. I mean, the performances for Man United have been way worse than the results, haven't they? I mean, all season. So, yeah, I think against a quality side like City are in form, it could be a problem. Hoyland's absence is massive. It's because he gives them that threat, doesn't he, in behind. And yeah, Rashford, it just doesn't look himself again, does he? He has these periods, and he's in that moment right now, isn't he, where he looks a shadow.
Well, that's Sunday 3:30 again. That slightly earlier Sunday afternoon slot. I'm not sure what the thinking is there, but returning to the FA Cup, mentioned Leicester beating Bournemouth at the Vitality. That was in extra time. Incredible goal from Abdul Fatawu. Leicester in the quarterfinals will be facing Chelsea, who were 3-2 winners against Leeds on Wednesday. Jay, were you at that game or watch it?
I was watching it from
right. What did you see?
First 10 minutes from Chelsea was very nervous. Definitely had a hangover from the Carabao Cup final. The contrast between the two teams at that point in the game was massive. You had Leeds comfortably playing out from the back. You know, you had 17-year-old Archie Gray in midfield. He looked far older and far more experienced. And Chelsea just looked like a bag of nerves. Axel Disasi in particular took some very heavy touches, plays a really bad pass in the build-up to Leeds' first goal. It was Robert Sanchez's first game, I think, since early December. And everybody just looked rusty. You had Alfie Gilchrist, who's a right-footed centre-back, can sometimes play right-back, playing at left-back against Dan James. It just looked very, very muddled. You've got
cheers for that, Poch.
Yeah, exactly. You've got Matteo Joseph, this 20-year-old striker for Leeds, who scores his first career goals. So Leeds didn't have Jorginho Ruta, who's one of their better players. Crescencio Somerville and Willy Nonto were on the bench. So this wasn't Leeds at their strongest, but they just looked so much better. But fair play to Chelsea. Nicholas Jackson's first goal was very well worked. It kind of came out of nowhere, settled down a little bit, but it still just made it really, really difficult for themselves. I was thinking about it earlier. The best way to describe the game and Chelsea's performance is it's like passing a test at school where you get the bare minimum to pass.
Right.
So it's like, okay, we've passed, but mum and dad are not going to be happy that we've, you know, we've not done
like
it with
a
2-2
degree.
Yeah, exactly. It's
nothing
like a 2-2 degree.
I wouldn't know.
Wasn't good at all. But also, they played three different right backs in the game, and I think that kind of sums up just how muddled they are.
They changed right back twice?
Multiple times. So Malagusto starts at right back, then Poch kind of shuffles the pack, and then it's Alfie Gilchrist goes from left back to right back, and Gilchrist gets taken off, and I think it's Trevor Chalobah who goes there.
Okay.
So it's just very bizarre. I think that kind of sums up Chelsea, that it's just such a mixed bag of a team.
Mateo Joseph, by the way, his father is Emil Heskey's cousin.
Yeah, and he took his goals really well.
Mm?
The first goal in particular just kind of pounced on a defensive mistake, and then the second one, it's great movement for his header.
It was Conor Gallagher who finally got the winner for Chelsea, who's suddenly in the goals kind of almost every game.
It took him a while, didn't it? Mm. I think his performance levels have been pretty good this season. He's been one of their best players, hasn't he? But he hadn't found the goals. And when you play in that number 10 position, that's kind of where he's been. You do need goals to justify your inclusion in that role. So, yeah, he's in a good run of form, I guess. Mudryk's finish was quite tidy.
Mm.
And it was nice to see Enzo Fernandez finally do something for that winning goal. I mean, other than sort of just be there. I mean, seriously, I don't get it with him. Like, what did they see in him to make him the record transfer? Based on his form, it's a strange one.
I think one of the confusing things with Fernandes is that Pochettino doesn't seem to know where to put him, in that he spends half his time playing as one of the number sixes and half the time playing as one of the number tens. And I'm not sure he is either of those things, even though, you know, the role he played in the build-up to Gallagher's winner was sort of fairly classic number 10 creative midfielder kind of play. But yeah, he is one of several fairly sizable disappointments at Chelsea so far this season. That said, I do feel like Chelsea are improving, and we've been here before with Chelsea this season. Oh, Pochettino, I think it's just starting to come together, and then you know, the wheels fall off. But look at the recent results. Very impressive win away at Aston Villa in the FA Cup that no one saw coming. Really impressive performance, I thought, away at Man City in the league.
Yeah.
I think they did a better job of containing City than almost anyone has done this season. Unfortunate in the Carabao Cup final. Obviously, the focus is on Liverpool and the kids, etc. But I thought some of the criticism of Chelsea was a bit harsh, and, you know, the Gary Neville bottle jobs line. It's a great line. I'm not sure it was particularly relevant, in that I didn't think they bottled the game. They just weren't, you know,
they just didn't take their chances. They tied up in extra time.
And they basically stopped playing in extra time, which I'm not sure was necessarily bottling it as just, you know, kind of some sporting
But for Kelleher, they would have won that game, wouldn't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you're allowed to field a goalkeeper. I mean, that's part of football.
I think with Chelsea, we obviously just spoke about Gallagher performing quite well, but then he seems to be the player that's constantly linked with a move somewhere else. And when he's coming up with, you know, scored two goals against Crystal Palace recently in the league, which kind of got them out of a hole, gets that goal last night, and you're thinking, what a horrendous decision that would be if it's kind of taken out of Pochettino's hands and he's sold, especially because he's been given the captain's armband as well. He's come through their academy. He is performing better for them than Caicedo and Fernandes, and he didn't cost them anything.
Chelsea through anyway to the quarterfinals. Also in that round, you'll get a Midland derby for Wolves and Coventry. Wolves, 1-0 winners against Brighton. Mario Lemina with the only goal, just over a minute played. Late on, Brighton throwing goalkeeper Jason Steele up to try and nick an equaliser.
It's a terrible night for Jason Steele, did you see? Because it was his fault for the goal.
Yeah.
So he drops it, basically, at the feet of Lemina, and that's a blooper. And then it's a bad miss, isn't it? Even for a keeper.
This might be the cup tie. Back across, Steele! Incredible! Jason Steele with a chance to level for Brighton.
Is it Dunk who wins the ball in the air and it falls to him? He's
all alone.
He's 3 yards out, all on his own. And basically, it was a Neville-style bottle job, wasn't
it? He sort of tries to do the right thing. It's quite a difficult chance, despite the proximity to goal, in that, like, he's got to hit it, or he thinks he has to hit it with the outside of his right foot. Being a goalkeeper, that is not a skill set that he will ever have had to work on. And so he completely fluffed it.
There you go.
Forget for Jason Steele.
Wolves go through and will meet Coventry, who are the lowest ranked team left in the competition after ending the dreams of sixth tier Maidstone on Monday.
I was there.
Oh, you were there.
I was there. Adrian, yeah, it was a good occasion.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was. A great atmosphere. Pretty much every seat was
Maidstone
taken.
Fans,
oh, 5,000! Yeah,
really?
made a great noise. Filled the away end.
Yeah,
it was a beautiful scene, and Maidstone basically kind of made the mistake of going for it.
Mm.
Like they didn't want to park the bus. George Ellacobi, we know he's like Mr. Positive, isn't he? He's come across so brilliantly. And I think he just made his mind up. Let's just have a bit of fun with this and let's try and play some good football and press them and try and just cause them problems. And of course, that leaves spaces and Coventry just played around and they were just too fit, too sharp, too good, really. Some excellent individual performances. Casey Palmer, brilliant. And Ellis Sims scored a hat-trick. So, yeah, I was impressed with Coventry.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay. Newcastle. Not sure if anyone saw them. They made it past Blackburn, but only on penalties.
That looked like an absolute humdinger of a game. The highlights were fantastic. I mean, so many chances. Really, really open-ended. And
Dubravka was the sort of hero, wasn't he?
Yeah. Two Blackburn saves in the shootout.
Don't Blackburn make some sort of like triple save slash goal line clearance? I've seen basically a shot of someone filming from the stands and it just lands on Almiron's face and he just looks absolutely perplexed how the ball doesn't go.
Yeah, no, there were loads of moments like that. I was slightly thrown by the camera angle at Ewood Park. I don't watch much Championship football, so this might have been the case for a while.
Mm.
But I didn't... It was a new camera angle that I didn't...
YouTube highlights?
On like the kind of the BBC highlights.
And it's quite like...
It's kind of lower than it used to be. So, you know, one of the joys of being a football fan is you'll see, you'll flick channels and you'll land upon a game and like, oh, I recognise that stadium. And I was like, where the... I mean, I knew it was Blackburn because I deliberately sought out Blackburn Newcastle highlights, but it was confusing.
Okay. Newcastle. I've got Man City in the quarterfinals. Is that home or away?
They're away.
Ooh.
Yeah, if it had been home, it would have been a very good tie, but you feel like that's a match City will win.
Man United, meanwhile, their opponents in the quarterfinals are Liverpool, who beat Southampton 3-0 on Wednesday night. Adrian, you watched this for us. On one hand, you mentioned the cop kids, the clock kids narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Something special is going on there. On the other, Southampton were pretty great and could have taken the lead in the first half. But let's talk about the amazing kind of magical moment that's going on with all these young players.
Yeah, you give them credit. They're just sort of riding on the crest of a wave, aren't they? They're just so excited to be there, to be involved. And they're taking their chances. These boys are playing very, very well. Jadon Dans came off the bench, son of Neil Dans. He's only just retired. He was playing like last year or the year before at Macclesfield. So, you know, that's how young he is. He comes off the bench.
So his first game for Liverpool, he wins the League Cup.
No, he made his Premier League debut weekend.
Right.
Then he wins the weekend before the before Carabao. Then he wins
in the Luton game. Is
Then he wins the cup, plays and did all right actually at Wembley. And then he comes off the bench and scores two.
And what a brilliant first goal. Tom, you mentioned this before.
Incredible. But you think about like a young kid out of the academy playing at home in a game like that in front of the cop and the ball gets played through to him down the inside right channel and the composure that he showed to just dink it over the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Sensational.
Yeah, Joe Lumley made it easy. If I was being critical, he comes out too fast and it's one of those where I think most players in that position would have looked at the keeper and thought, got to dink this, but he executed it brilliantly. The second goal was just as good for me because it's a shot from Connor Bradley that's parried, but he's anticipating the rebound like way quicker than any of the defenders. He's onto it in a flash, scores a second.
That was his second, Liverpool's third. The first goal had been scored by Luis Cumas.
Yeah, Jason Cumas, his son.
A good goal, no?
Yeah, really. Well, it's a lucky goal because, he cuts inside and he's really aiming it for the other corner and it hits a deflection, it goes into the near post. So he's quite fortunate. I have to say, up until that goal, the kids were really struggling.
Mm.
And Southampton were unbelievable. It's not unbelievable to me because I've watched them a lot this season. I know what they're capable of. Again, it's sort of Saints reserves as well. A lot of players rested. But the way they played out from the back was just carving Liverpool open at will. And they created, I would say, half a dozen clear chances. Kelleher was brilliant again. Some of the finishing was woeful, but they could have scored five at Anfield. You know, it wouldn't have been unfair. So as much as the narrative is all about these kids are amazing, they're all going to be, they're going to be worth £500 million in a couple of years. They actually struggled for a lot of the game to contain Southampton. There was not a lot of protection for the defence. And the other interesting thing tactically from Liverpool was that Joe Gomez played central midfield in the game, which I don't think I've seen him play before. I think right back, centre half, left back, never centre mid. it was a mixed bag, I would say.
Really?
I think on the ball, pretty good. Some lovely passes, but the way that Southampton just broke at them down the middle sort of spoke volumes about maybe how he struggled to sort of cover that domain.
Struggled to a 3-0 win.
Mm. Just on Jadon Dance, he's actually from a musical family.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've discovered from having a look at his dad, Neil's Wikipedia page. So Neil's dad, who was also called Neil,
right.
So Jadon Dance's grandfather,
yeah.
was a backing singer on the UK's entry in the 1987 Eurovision Song
Seriously?
Contest.
What was that?
Only the Light, performed by Ricky. It's only the light that fades through the night. A shadow that's
falling, and the darkness is calling. Only the Light, performed by Ricky, and that's Neil Dance, you can hear. That you can hear
in the background.
In the background.
Not only that, but Jaden's sister Hayla represented the UK in the Junior Eurovision Song Contest 2023.
Okay, how'd that go?
The UK came in fourth.
Fourth, okay.
Fourth.
All right.
With their group Stand Unique, and the E in Unique is a three, a stylized three. And there's more. Neil Dance, so
Neil's. The father.
Son,
Jaden's dad,
father, also musical himself, took a video editing and production course at the London Academy of Media, Film and TV. And there's a great line here on his Wikipedia page that just says, he was reported to be about to release a single, but did not. That appears to be where his musical career began and ended. But still, musical genes.
Dance music.
Dance, there you go. Yeah. I mean, would have been spoiled for choice on the,
you know. Annoyingly talented family.
Well,
yeah.
Indeed so, Adrian. Indeed so. Well, that's enough FA Cup for now. Liverpool this weekend are going to be... Ooh, away at Nottingham Forest. We'll touch on that because it's been a big week for Forest, what with one thing and another. The other, perhaps, being in particular the PSR ruling relating to Everton. And we'll get on to that next.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
points penalty news this week. Everton's 10-point penalty for breaching profit and sustainability rules got reduced by 4 points to just 6, sending the Toffees rocketing up to 15th in the table. Good news, and not potentially, because the appeals panel ruling also specified that only a points deduction is appropriate for a breach of Rule E51, which is the relevant one, and Everton are, of course, facing a separate charge of breaking that, as are Nottingham Forest. Wow. Matt Slater's on the line. Matt, I've just told you lots of things you already know, and much, much more. So, first of all, how much should Everton be celebrating?
That's a good question. It's not really for me to answer, is it? I'm not Everton. But I can only sort of go on the responses to my pieces and social media. Yes, they are celebrating, because 6 points is better than 10, and they have now moved a little bit further away from the relegation zone, which is good. And I think they feel, certainly as a club, vindicated by one of the successful grounds of appeal, and this is the one they picked up in their own statement, that they the charge that they acted in bad faith, that they were less than frank, the appeal board agreed with them on that one, and it was one of the successful grounds of appeal. It's a really interesting one. I don't want to get too deep into that one, because it was a bit of a strange one, in that the first commission probably got that wrong. The Premier League didn't really argue that point, and the independent commission probably sort of just went a little bit off-piste on that one. So that's why it's been corrected by the appeal board. But anyway, I can definitely see why Everton, the club, and the fans feel vindicated by that particular point. So one of the successful grounds of appeal.
Right.
The other one is, I think, the more relevant one, and this is probably more of a mistake on the Premier League's part, was pointed out by several people, me and many others. And again, it's a long story as to why this mistake is there and who the blame really should be directed at. And I would argue it's the clubs. People should always remember that. The Premier League is a shareholder body. It's the clubs that make the rules. And that's, they don't have a schedule. They don't have a tariff, if you like, a defined list of punishments for, if you are this much over, this is how many points you lose. If you're that much over, this is how many points you should lose. And the appeal body has said, you should have had one of those.
Do they have one now?
No, they still don't. They have guidelines. And Masters, Richard Masters, in his submission to the first panel, did try and say, look, we've got some guidelines now. Here they are. What do you think?
Uh-huh.
And the first commission said, yeah, thanks very much. No, because the actual rule that you've written down is that we have complete discretion. We get to decide.
Okay.
Then there was a whole debate about, well, how they got to 10 points. They got to 10 points in their own way. And it was actually very, very close to the Premier League guidelines, which again annoyed Everton. They were like, well, hold on a minute. Are these guidelines or not? And you said you didn't listen to them. And then you actually came up with a sanction that kind of meets them. Long story short, the appeal body has looked at all that and gone, that was a mistake. It's still a mistake. You should probably fix that. But anyway, the best available guideline, and this is what Everton argued, is the EFL's set of guidelines. And the 6 points, again, a bit complicated because there are different rules, different numbers, but if you actually look at the percentages, 6 points is kind of what Everton would have got if this was an EFL case.
Okay. Now, how much should they be concerned, though, about the specific line in the, 41-page report that only a points deduction will be appropriate for these kind of breaches, given that they have another charge that's going to be heard? When is the next charge? In March?
A couple of weeks. So that's huge. And it's huge not just for them, it's huge obviously for Nottingham Forest.
Right.
And for several other clubs who are sort of teetering on the brink and may well be in this trouble at some point in the future. Right? We shall see. It's definitely a significant issue for Everton second time around, and I would argue probably even more significant for Forest, because there will be more mitigating factors for Everton second time around. The obvious one being sort of double jeopardy. We've already been punished for a lot of this already. Yes, we know it's a rolling period, but they will have the advantage of saying, which they didn't get this first time around, our losses have been coming down, the trend is better, i.e. our direction of travel, we are trying. So I think that will be a mitigating factor this time around. Nottingham Forest, first time up, we still don't know yet, you know, how much they breached. We can guess, but we also know that their main point is the timing of the sale of Brennan Johnson. They willingly did that. They did it for, if you like, good reason, sensible reasons to do with sustainability. They got a better price by delaying, but they did knowingly, I think, breach the rules. And this appeal body has just very clearly defined that when we're talking about this rule, profitability, sustainability, and you blow the threshold, a sporting sanction points is the appropriate penalty, and our starting point is 6 points.
Wow.
So you mitigate up, you aggravate down. Well, the other way around, right? You mitigate down, aggravate up. So that's your starting point, 6 points. Away you go, Forest. Try and knock us down from 6 points.
Okay. Nottingham Forest, who are currently 4 points above Luton and the bottom three. So their hearing's going to start next month, as will Everton's, I believe I'm right in saying.
Next week.
Oh, Forest is next week.
Yeah, well, which is next month.
Yeah. And then there's going to be a set of appeals, probably, you'd imagine. What are the chances that the season will end without us actually knowing who's staying up and who's going down? Kind of like a Schrodinger's Premier League.
Very good chances, in that, look, we've seen just, how long these cases take. They're actually going as fast as they can. They're actually going at sort of breakneck speed, if you look at the sort of the history of these things, certainly compared to the EFL. And as the EFL is probably the best example. So they're going as fast as they can. But these are complicated matters. You've mentioned how long the rulings are. There will almost certainly be an appeal. So we should have, if the Premier League sort of sticks to its timeline, and they are trying to do this again for good reason, because they want justice to apply in the appropriate season, that whole like justice delayed thing. So they want a ruling by, is it April? Yeah, early April.
April 15th, I've seen for Forest.
Yeah, there you go, well done. Early verdict, so April, and then an appeal. And I think the appeal date is May 24th, which is five days after the end of the season. There you go.
5 days after the end of the season. Yeah. Incredible. It's VAR, I think, has enriched the game enormously for lots of people. A goal is scored. Did it happen? Can we celebrate? I don't know. A little bit of suspense. And now we're having that for the league table
It's the logical conclusion. It's the direction of travel.
Fantastic. Matt, what you're suggesting is that's how this season's going to end, and probably we're going to see more of this kind of thing next season too.
Really short answer, yes.
Matt Slater there, who you can read along with a bunch of other very informed people breaking down this week's decision and all the kind of subsequent and previous ones on theathletic.com. Adrian?
It seems unacceptable, really, that we could end the season not knowing who's been relegated. I just think it's crazy. Couldn't everything... Right. Matt's just said they're doing it as fast as they can. Mm. Just from the outside looking in, it feels like maybe you could do it a little bit faster, just to get it done before the end of the season. But strange times.
I mean, it could be worse. This does happen elsewhere in Europe, and sometimes you have seasons that are 2 days away from starting, and there are five or six teams that don't know which division they're going to be in. And I guess we're not used to that happening here, but.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, well, there was one in France last year. There was, I think it was to do with the relegation between Ligue 2 and the National, which is the third tier. And there was a game between Bordeaux and Rodez that had to be called off because a fan attacked a player. And up until, I think, 2 or 3 days before the start of this current season, there were a bunch of teams that didn't even know which division they were in. But yeah, not to say that that's something desirable.
Right.
Been a while since we had like a proper relegation wrangle.
Mm.
Sort of takes you back to 06-07, Carlos Tevez gate.
There you go. Yeah, which also was determined after the team. But the relegations there were respected. It was a financial penalty, not a points one. The bottom of the table currently, as I mentioned, Nottingham Forest now 4 clear of the drop. They are the next in line after the bottom three, who are Burnley and Sheffield United, who look kind of done and dusted. Luton are in 18th spot, 4 from safety. They do have a game in hand, though, over everybody. Then you've got Forest and Brentford and Everton. And Everton and Brentford are only a point better off than Forest. How worried are Brentford feeling? Are they perhaps relieved to now finally know what looks like the entity of the task ahead of them? We'll come on to that in a second, but a quick run through what's happening this weekend. Mentioned earlier, Man City have Man United over for Sunday afternoon. Elsewhere, the weekend begins with 6 games at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Newcastle Wolves, Spurs Palace, Forest Liverpool, Brentford Chelsea, Everton West Ham and Fulham Brighton. At 5:30 on Saturday, Luton host Aston Villa. Sunday begins with Burnley Bournemouth at 1 o'clock. And then at 3:30, the Manchester Derby. And on Monday, Sheffield United face Arsenal. Sheffield United have lost their last 2 home games 5-0. The Gunners have won their last 2 away games 5-0 and 6-0. And it was 5-0 when the two teams met at the Emirates earlier in the season. Anyone's guess what's going to happen Bramall Lane on Monday. Because football, you just don't know, do you? Anyway, Jay, how worried should Brentford be?
I think maybe for the first time since I've covered Brentford for, this is my third season covering them, they are really starting to feel the pressure. Obviously, the news about Everton's points deduction getting reduced to 6 came on Monday lunchtime, and they were playing Monday evening against West Ham. Hmm. They'd beaten West Ham 5 times in a row in the Premier League. Brentford have been through a difficult time this season with injuries and a loss of form. We still felt fairly confident that they'd be able to get a good result. And then they were 2-0 down inside 7 minutes and never really recovered from that. And I thought it was really interesting. After the game, I went into the press conference and I asked Thomas Frank, did the news about Everton distract you, distract the team? And he just said, absolutely not, moved on. It was very clear he didn't want to linger on the subject. But then on the other side of the wall in the mix zone, Christian Norgaard was asked about it, Brentford's club captain. And he said, someone sitting in a room with a calculator, giving and taking away points, and it's messing with people's lives.
Mm.
So I think that can clearly tell you there's a bit of mixed messaging coming through from Brentford. And even if Thomas Frank feels like it didn't distract him, the situation's clearly impacting his players, and that's not a good look.
Okay. It's a great image, that.
It is.
One man.
Yeah.
in a calculator. Calculator man, have you reached your decision?
Yes.
Well, are Brentford staying up and going down?
In defence of the fellow or the man or woman with the Casio, it wasn't him who deliberately overspent. The clearly delineated rules would be what the Premier League maybe says about that. But as you say, Brentford's record against West Ham have been impeccable. This game, not so much. It finished 4-2. A hat-trick for Jarrod Bowen, his first of his career. And Lucas Paquetá was back, which makes a huge difference for the Hammers, as we saw what happened while he was out. Brentford, meanwhile, that was their 10th defeat in 12 Premier League matches. What's happened? What happened at Christmas?
I think the injuries they've had this season, and I know a lot of teams have experienced injuries, and it's getting a bit boring now. It seems like every team in the Premier League suffering in some way, shape or form. But, you know, they've lost Rico Henry, who's their first-choice left-back. They've lost their first-choice right-back, Aaron Hickey. Ethan Pinnock's out until, I think, the beginning of April. Brian Mbeumo, who is probably one of the most informed players in the Premier League, has been out since mid-December. You know, Ivan Toney's come back and he gave them a bit of a morale boost, but Toney can't win them games single-handedly. They've tried to switch formation to a 3-5-2 to be more defensively compact, and then it's just not quite worked. You know, Nathan Collins, who's their club record signings, made a couple of bad mistakes. He did it in the 4-1 defeat to Wolves. He did it against Liverpool as well. I think he completely misses the ball when Liverpool score their fourth goal. So just everything seems to be...
What about the keeper?
He's been better.
He's not great.
You're not convinced, are you?
He's not great. He's not great.
I think Flecken's been much better in the last couple of weeks, and Thomas Frank has said that himself. But certainly before Christmas, there are a lot of question marks about his performances.
On numbers-wise, they've let in 41 goals in open play, Brentford. Only one team has let in more, and that's Sheffield United.
Well, since Christmas, and no one's let in more than Brentford.
Yeah, so like the resilient, like you talked about all the things they've lost. It feels to me as if they lost a bit of resilience, which was kind of their thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they also had this record during their first two seasons in the Premier League. I think at one stage they'd maybe gone 24 games where if they took the lead, they didn't lose. It was remarkable. And that seems to have gone the complete other way. Every time they take the lead, they seem to be quite frail and susceptible, and probably hasn't helped constantly switching those back three. Ben Mee will play one game and then he did get injured on Monday night. So then they'll have to change the defence again. It just feels like a little bit of the magic that, you know, Brentford had in those first two seasons in the Premier League has been lost for various different reasons. And I also think Norgaard's comments were maybe the first time Brentford have kind of admitted, oh, actually, the external noise is affecting us a little bit.
Right.
I think they'd been pretty good before at just tuning things out and focusing on themselves.
Presumably it'd been affecting Everton, who's directly affected by what the appeals decided on the points penalty. So you'd beaten, I think, West Ham 5 times in a row and lost this. Your next game is against Chelsea, who you've won 3 out of 3 against.
Yeah, but all at Stamford Bridge, and this is at Brentford are at home.
Ah.
But it's a good and a bad time to play Chelsea. They've just lost the Carabao Cup final. You know, they squeaked through against Leeds last night. Are they going to kind of come back with a little bit of a vengeance on Saturday afternoon? And then after that, they've got a trip to the Emirates Stadium.
Ooh.
Then it's Burnley away. Mm. Then it's Man United and Brighton. So it's a really tricky run of games. And you're looking at a 3-game spell in April where Brentford play Luton, Sheffield United and Everton in a row. And you're thinking they could be in the relegation zone by that point. And, you know, anything could happen at that stage.
You have a 5-point margin for now. Luton, as mentioned, do have a game in hand. Forest potentially are going to have fewer points than they do right now. It's all quite exciting, let's say that. West Ham, anyway, who bounced back after a rotten run of form with Paquetá back in the side, will be heading to Everton. How about that? Toffees, who perhaps because of the external noise, as you put it, are on the longest winless run of any side of the Premier League, 9 matches since they last had a win.
But they've only lost one of the last 6 in the league. And I think this just speaks to Everton's real peculiarity as a team who are brilliant defensively and absolutely terrible in attack. You look at Everton's defensive stats, they've got the best defensive record outside the top 6. I think in terms of XG conceded, only Arsenal and City have done better than them since the turn of the year. Only Arsenal have kept more clean sheets in the league, but they can't translate those clean sheets into wins because none of their players score goals. And Dominic Calvert-Lewin hasn't scored since October, I think. And for all that there are, you know, talented attacking midfielders who pop up with the occasional goal, Dwight McNeil, Abdoulaye Doucouré, Jack Harrison, they just seem to be stuck in this rut. And you go back to the game against Brighton last weekend where they are within touching distance of a really important win and they concede a 95th minute equaliser to Lewis Dunk. I think the form that Everton showed in the immediate aftermath of the announcement of the points deduction showed that, you know, when all the, you know, kind of pistons are pumping and all the engines are firing, they are capable of winning games. But, you know, that's the real problem at the moment. And it's, you know, it's been the case for a while. They just can't score goals.
Indeed. All right. We'll touch on Forest, what awaits them, and some of the other key things to look forward to this weekend next.
Hi, I'm Ali Maxwell, and I'm the host of the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. And what we love to do is provide measured, detailed analysis of tactical and technical aspects of the beautiful game. At the top of the Premier League, 2 points separate 3 teams. It could be the closest and most exciting title race for years. For our latest episode, we've scoured over those 3 title contenders to see if we can scientifically suss out who will be crowned Premier League champions in May. Will it be Man City, Liverpool, or Arsenal? If that sounds up your street, then check out the Athletic Football Tactics podcast wherever you get yours.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Top of the Premier League table has Liverpool on 60 points, of course, one ahead of Manchester City, who are themselves one ahead of Arsenal. This is only the second season in Premier League history where 3 teams have had 58 or more points after 26 matches. The previous one, 2018-19, when it was Man City and Liverpool, and the Spurs, quaintly enough, Spurs, who then had a disastrous end to the campaign. They only won 3 of the last 12 matches. That was the season that they got into the Champions League final, and they also moved back into their stadium, and it was the last days of Poch, etc. Anyway, so it's exciting.
It was potentially the greatest Premier League title race that we've ever seen. This one that we're living through right now, in that we've never had a true 3-team title race. You have title races where 3 teams are in contention.
What about the one where Chelsea was in contention with
the Leicester season?
Yeah.
But what I mean by that is, imagine a scenario, if you will, where 3 teams are in contention to win the title on the season's final day.
Wow.
And we've never had that. We've come close.
Leicester cruised it in the end, didn't they?
Yeah, Leicester won the league by 10 points that season. And you've had seasons where you've had 3 teams who were kind of up there, but one has always fallen away, and it's ended up being a kind of a 2-team shootout. But imagine if it's this close.
This is a goal difference in finals talked that, yeah. about, and obviously Arsenal have been smashing them in lately. So amazingly, I think Arsenal do have the best goal difference by one.
That goal difference for you, Arsenal 39, Liverpool 38, Man City
33.
Yeah, what a City!
Not that I'm keeping a close eye on it. Anyway.
On the subject of goal difference, mentioned that on Tuesday that Inter over in Serie A currently got a goal difference. Well, had a goal difference of plus 51. And the incredible thing about that is no other side has even scored 51 goals in Serie A. But they went and added another four goals to that in absolutely hammering Atalanta. Anyway. All very dramatic.
And they've only let in 12 goals, just looking at the Serie A table.
Yeah, they're in 26 clean sheets games, all over. They're just mad. Yeah. Anyway.
12 points clear.
Back to the Premier League. Adrian, you're of the opinion that this might be a good time for Forest to play Liverpool.
I do think that. I think there's such a good feel-good factor around Liverpool. Because the kids have come in and they've done well. And they've won the cup and they've beaten Southampton. But the reality is, they could easily have lost both those games. And the Chelsea had loads of chances. Southampton had an amazing amount of chances. This is an away game in the Premier League against a highly motivated Nottingham Forest. I think this is a tricky test. This is a harder test in many respects for the youngsters than the two previous ones. They're not worried about anything at the moment. The more games that young players have, the more that things might level out a little bit, is my sort of honest appraisal of it. So yeah, I think Forest can be competitive in this game. Obviously, we don't know who's going to be fit for Liverpool. I mean, Darwin Nunez looked fine, didn't he, the other day? I mean, that was extraordinary. The hurdling technique was different gravy. But so I'm assuming he might play, but it's still going to be a patched up Liverpool side. And I think Nottingham Forest have scored in every game, remember, under Nuno in the Premier League. They've got Awoniyi, who's a real handful. Elanga, talked about him earlier. Morgan Gibbs-White. They've got players that can create against Liverpool. So I think this is a tough test. And they've not been battered by anyone at home. I think Spurs won 2-0 there. And that's the biggest sort of defeat Forest have had on home turf this year. So I think it's going to be close.
They also won this fixture 1-0 last season, Forest?
Exactly.
There you go. So could see a change atop the table with the City heavy favourites to beat United at the weekend. Arsenal's mentioned waiting till Monday for their trip to Bramall Lane. Down the other end, Luton Aston Villa, Adrian?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Luton set up. Obviously, after their tactical experiment against Man City backfired. Yeah, Leon Bailey, I just wanted to give him a shout-out. I've just written a piece on him.
Where can we read that?
Premier League's website. Yeah, I'm not sure when it'll be out, but it'll be out before the weekend. And in it, basically, I rave about him because I think he's got to be considered one of the most underrated players in the Premier League. His numbers are extraordinary. 8 goals, 7 assists. You think, okay. But they're all in open play. And in open play, his goals and assists per 90 are the best of anybody in the division. It's, you know, he is producing a direct goal involvement in open play at a faster rate than any other player in the league.
How fast is the rate?
It is. Yeah, let me just get my piece out.
Why do you think he's underrated? In terms of why do people not
I think it's
on him?
Because he's been there for so long. I think if he was a summer signing who'd arrived last summer and been this good from the get-go, people would have been blown away. It's because he was already there the season before and we didn't really see much of him.
Right.
And then you go back to last summer and Moussa Diaby is the star signing who comes in for a Bayer Leverkusen for a decent amount of money and he started the season quite well, but Diaby isn't really getting a kick at the moment and no one's really talking about it too much because Bailey's flying.
Is it because it's Villa as well?
Could also be because
he's also quite an erratic player. You know, because not everything he does is polished, but I just think he's very incisive. By the way, 84 minutes per goal involvement.
Goal or assist?
Goal or assist, yeah. Incredible. 1.07 per 90 minutes. He's got a great relationship with Ollie Watkins. Also, what I like about him is that he's known as being a lefty. So he plays off the right, he drops his shoulder, he comes in and he curls it in the top corner, or he produces an in-swinging cross for somebody. He is great at that. But what he's added to his game this year is going on the outside, and he's produced a number of assists by getting to the byline and cutting it back for Ollie Watkins. So I think he is a top player. And I think Luton are going to have their hands full containing him.
Interesting. Mm. Sunday at 1 o'clock, the early game for you this weekend. Here's a thought. Last time these two teams, Burnley and Bournemouth, met in October, Burnley were actually above Bournemouth in the table. Madness. That was the point at which Iraola hadn't won any Premier League games in 10 attempts, and it looked like his time was going to be up, and then they went and got their first win of the season against Burnley. So, yeah, there you go. Burnley in a world of pain down the bottom, 7 points off... more than that, 11 points off safety. 11. Mm.
But as well as Bournemouth have been going since that reverse fixture, mm-hmm. They have hit a bit of a sticky patch of late. 7 games without a win in the league. So no wins in the league in 2024 as things stand. You suspect that in true...
Burnley fashion,
true cliche fashion, that they'll have enough Bournemouth to keep their heads above.
A game against Burnley unlocked their
tricky run last time. And if there is a team who you want to face at the moment, if there's a team who are short on confidence and looking for a boost, as we saw with Crystal Palace last weekend, then Burnley are very much.
If Burnley don't win, then we could write them off. I think we've all written off Sheffield United, but if Burnley don't win this game, they're gone.
I've also written them off.
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't quite written them off.
Yeah. Now, also this weekend, get excited about Newcastle Wolves. Newcastle are winless in the last 4 at St James's Park. Wolves are what season they're having under Gary O'Neill into the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. And that, woof.
Yeah. The great stat around this fixture, by the way.
Yeah.
17 meetings between Newcastle and Wolves. 11 have been drawn.
Is that a great stat?
Yeah. Draws are much rarer than 11 out of 17. I think if you look at, across a Premier League weekend, there might be one draw, maybe two.
That's true. Yeah. 11 of the last 17, including the most recent meeting at Molineux in October, which was 2-2. Mm. Spurs taking on Crystal Palace. Spurs haven't played a game in a fortnight since they got beaten at home by Wolves. Of course, now they're taking on a Palace side revitalised by the arrival of Oliver Glasner, who... they say Spurs have been looking at in the past for their own bench.
Here's what you could have won.
Yeah.
Vibes.
Nice. Palace haven't won a league match at Tottenham since November 1997. What was number one in November 1997?
I don't know. Tell us, James, please.
Barbie Girl by Aqua. Yeah. Oh, do you know what? That's that game. Yeah, and it was. Yeah. Tune, as they say. Yeah. That game was Christian Gross's first game in charge. Mr. Tube Ticket himself of Spurs. Fantastic. You've got Fulham against Brighton. Seagulls have never beaten the Cottagers. They've had 7 Premier League meetings. No João Palhinha still for Fulham, who's serving the second of his too-much suspension, but they did just fine with Lukic last weekend. Oh,
he was good, and I tell you, they surprised me. Rodrigo Muniz. Mm. I mean, they spent all that money on Breuer to bring him in on loan, and basically it was just done to give him a rocket up his backside because Muniz, he just looks unrecognisable. I mean, he wasn't... He didn't score in that game, did he?
He hit the post.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But he was good. He was a proper handful. And they didn't take him off. I think Fulham probably favourites for that. Brighton have got good players out, haven't they?
Yeah. So Mitoma, going out for the rest of the season, they say, with a back problem. They're already without Solly March and João Pedro for an extended period. They've got this game and then they've got Roma next week in the last 16 of the Europa League. Now, it is February the 29th, so can't go without mentioning quick on this day for Ander and anyone else who's excited by leap year content. 29th of February 2012, Stuart Pearce managed England for the first and only time. Do you remember this game, Adrian?
Not really, no.
Against the Netherlands.
Did he win?
No, I don't think so. I think, wasn't it 3-2 for the Netherlands? And yeah, Fabio Capello had stepped down in protest at John Terry, his captaincy choice, being having the armband stripped from him over things.
What a hell to die on.
Yeah.
That is a really bad hill.
That is a very...
Well, like, do you think maybe Fabio felt, finally something that I can use as a...
Yeah, to get out of this.
Get me out of this country.
I think so. And Roy Hodgson, of course, came in straight after. Also, hey, this is maybe the one I should have led with. February 29th, 2004, what happened? Borough.
Brilliant play from Janino. And Middlesbrough's trophy cabinet can be declared open. Steve McLaren has made history. His squad have made history.
Borough won the only major trophy in their history. Steve McLaren's Middlesbrough beating Big Sam's Bolton. These were different times. 2-1 to win the League Cup in a game played at Cardiff, because, of course, they were still building Wembley.
And as a consequence, Borough fans can only celebrate the anniversary of the club's major trophy every 4 years.
Wow.
As if being a Borough fan wasn't miserable enough.
Well, so this is their fifth anniversary.
Or something like that, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 5 years ago today. Where does time go?
It's flying by, isn't it?
Incredible. Very nicely done, Tom. Bringing us full circle on this Totally Football show. Next one will be with you late Sunday night, early Monday morning. I won't be there. Matt Davis Adams is going to be hosting, and I'll be back the next day, or Tuesday rather, with the European edition as we look ahead to the return of Champions League and Europa League and Conference League, and of course all the craziness that happens across the continent over the weekend. Many thanks to Adrian, Tom and Jay, and in the booth Liam and producer Charlie for today. And you, listener, do make sure you have a great weekend, and perhaps you'll join us thereafter. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for the Totally Football Show on YouTube, and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.